4CRB 89.3 FM. Nice and easy on the Gold Coast.
And a very good morning to you, John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. Back with you for another program of The Law and You on a very wet Tuesday. Your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock daylight saving time. All we ask you to do is get on that telephone as soon as you possibly can. The number is 5520888. The number again, 5520888. If you happen to be south of the Tweed River, you'll need to put 07 in front of the number, but otherwise from throughout Tweed and all throughout Queensland, you can simply dial that number, 5520888. As we say every week, we'd like you to call early because we invariably get a bank up of calls in the last 5 or 10 minutes of the program, which sometimes means we have to take calls off air. So it's always good if you can call during the program to avoid that, because that way not only do we help you with any little issues that you may have going on in your life, but there is always the possibility that someone listening who can't get to a telephone will get the answer to their query as well. So that number again, 5520888. The lines are free at the moment. Who knows? You could be caller number one this morning if you ring right now. And while we're waiting for those phones to call, you may remember last week the first caller was Ron, who had a query in relation to property that was owned by him and his late wife. And it related to the cross-collateralisation of the mortgage facilities over those properties. And the executor of his late wife's estate was seeking payment from Ron for money that was taken from the sale of a property in the wife's name against the debt that was on a jointly owned property. And I indicated to Ron that I thought the best case scenario was that he might be liable for half of that debt or half of the extra money that had been taken, and worst case scenario, he would be liable for the total amount, which seems to be generally the consensus of view. However, it is subject to what the actual security documents say. So, because the situation is that probably the money owing to the bank is regarded as, well, obviously it is regarded as a debt, and therefore it very well may be a debt still owing from his late wife's estate, notwithstanding that it's secured over another property. So there are a number of factors that might come into play here. One would be whether the jointly owned property has been transferred into the sole name of Ron as the surviving owner, and the debt is then still registered against that property, whether the debt is shown as being jointly and severally payable, a whole range of things. So it really would come down to examining the security documents that the bank took for its loan over the properties and how they were cross-collateralised to see just exactly how it all fits together. So I hope that's of a little bit of assistance to you, Ron. But in the meantime, we have Alan on the line. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Yes, good morning, John.
How can we help you today?
It's a, a property, deceased estate. All I want to know is how long do executors of the estate have to take before they can sell it? They're taking a long time. The my mother was deceased in October, early October.
Mm-hmm.
And they still haven't done anything about selling the property.
Right, okay. Well, normally what the executors would do, and is this in Queensland or New South Wales?
New South Wales.
Right, okay. The period of time down there is longer. I think from memory it might be 18 months for someone to contest the will. But the executors would certainly always wait until the period of time within which the estate or the will could be challenged to run before they will deal with the assets. Although, that being said, depending on the terms of the will, if the will gave the executors power to sell the property, then there probably wouldn't be any reason why they couldn't proceed to sell once probate of the will has been taken out. as long as they didn't distribute the will before the period of time within which claims can be lodged has expired. And the reason for that is because if the executors distribute in before that period of time has expired, then the executors can be personally liable to any person who makes a claim on the estate. Now, that being said, if you know the circumstances are such that there is no likelihood of a claim being made in the estate, for example, if the will is a fairly straightforward will and it just left the estate to the children of the deceased and there's no one else who would be likely to be a claimant, then there probably wouldn't be any reason why the executors couldn't proceed to sell as soon as possible, and they may even be prepared to distribute in an earlier period of time if the beneficiaries were prepared to give an indemnity to the executors for doing so.
Well, the only reason they don't want it taking so long to sell because it's a country property in New South Wales, and they like to go down there and use it. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours from Sydney, and they like to go down and use it two or three times, on weekends sort of thing, you know what I mean?
Well,
and but that doesn't help me that much.
No, it certainly doesn't. So I think that
so you're saying it's about 18 months
I'd have to just check on that time limit in New South Wales for you, Alan. I could do that and certainly make a comment on it next week. Or you could... is there a solicitor down in New South Wales who's dealing with the estate?
Well, yes, there is, yes.
Okay, well, you could ring that solicitor and ask, when the executors would be able to distribute the estate, when the period for making claims on the estate would expire, and then you could also ask them at the same time why it's taking so long for this to occur. If the executors are failing to fulfil their duty under the terms of the will in administering the estate promptly, and you said that the deceased passed away in October last year?
Yes.
Yeah, so I wouldn't really suggest that that's that they've been dilatory in that period of time. But if the executors have been dilatory in administering the estate in a timely fashion, then you can make an application to the court for an order that they administer the will, or alternatively that they be removed and replaced with an administrator.
Yes, that's what I've looked up and read.
Yep.
I was just wondering I couldn't get a time limit though.
Mm. Yes, well, see, it's only been 3 months, really, since death, so that's a very short space of time. And I'm fairly sure in New South Wales that in order to transmit the property, you've got to get probate of the will, so that takes a bit of time as well.
Yes, I think they have probate of the will already.
Right, okay. Well, they should be able to get the property transmitted, and then there'd be no... you can actually sell the property before transmission, because you can put a condition in the contract making it subject to the transmission being registered.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right, then.
All right.
Thank you very much. That's great.
Okay, then, Alan, all the very best.
Okay, mate. Bye-bye.
And the time on 4CRB is just past 19 minutes to 10. That's 19 minutes to 11. South of the border, 5520888 is the number if you're needing some free legal advice today. That number again, 5520888. And we say good morning to Graham. G'day, Graham. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, John. I'm well, thank you.
That's good.
John, just a couple of simple questions for you. Proprietary limited company with two shareholders holding one share each.
Mm-hmm.
If one director puts in, let's say, all the money to run that company, can the other person claim anything of that money?
Well, presumably those funds would be regarded or would have been put in either as a shareholder's loan or a director's loan. I assume that the two shareholders are also directors. So that money should be shown in the books of account of the company as being a loan, either a director's loan or a shareholder's loan.
That's correct.
And it would be ideal for the person who's put that money in if it were secured in some manner. So in terms of the company, that will remain a debt owing by the company to the person who put the money in, and a debt that can be claimed according to the terms of any loan agreement that was entered into in relation to it, and if there was no loan agreement, then the person could make a demand for the return of the money and then pursue recovery of it on that basis.
Okay. Hmm. So the other person, in fact, can't claim half of that money just because he is a shareholder?
No, certainly not, because the money, the only exception to that would be if the money was actually gifted to the company. So if the money was put in as a gift, then obviously it then becomes the money of the company. Then if the company were liquidated, the shareholders would be entitled to share in the net value of the company on liquidation. So after all of the expenses, tax, liquidator's fees, etc. were paid, if there were funds left over, it would be distributed equally to the shareholders.
Terrific. John, just another quick question.
Sure.
This matter could finish up going to Supreme Court. Can you represent yourself in Supreme Court, or must you have a barrister?
No, you can certainly represent yourself, in fact, in all jurisdictions in Australia. So you could even take a matter to the High Court and represent yourself if you wish to.
Fantastic. I feel that I'm very much in the right, and I think I could defend myself quite adequately without spending a lot of money if I can. If I lose, have I got a right to appeal if I went to court?
You may have grounds for appeal. It'll depend on the basis. It'll depend on what the judgment is and the basis on which you're seeking to appeal. The short answer to the question is usually you do, yes.
Okay. All right, John.
Okay.
Terrific. I really enjoy your program.
Thanks very much, Dave, and all the very best.
Thanks, John. Okay, bye.
And the time is just coming up to 15 and a half minutes to 10 right here on 4CRB. 5520 8888, the phone number. That number again, 5520 8888. Laura and you, your chance to get free legal advice just like Dave. G'day, Dave. How are you?
Good morning, John.
How can we help you today?
I have a question or two for you.
Sure.
My son, he's in his 40s. He has no will. He has recently parted from his partner, and they have had two kids in that period of time. The thing is this, then, the house has been cleared. What I would like to know is, can I, as his father, can I become an administrator executive if he gets a will made, which I'm forcing him to do?
Yep. Well, the short answer to the question is yes, you certainly can, Dave. And if anyone has property, I would strongly recommend that they do have a will. And by property I mean either real property or personal property, so money in a bank account, a motor car, all of those sorts of things need to be dealt with under a will. The other thing that your son needs to be aware of too is the property. You mentioned that he has a property. Was that owned with his partner?
Yes, but it's been split apart now. And my son has received his 50%.
Oh, okay, so
property.
He's received 50%. Has there actually been a property settlement done? A sanctioned property settlement?
It's gone through the
court.
He signed the deeds and all the rest of it, giving up his half of the property.
Right, okay.
Now, the thing is, the what's going through my head is this. When the money goes into his bank, and as I said, if he didn't have a will and something happened to him, can his partner claim any of that money?
Were they married, or just a de facto relationship?
No, de facto relationship.
Right, okay. Well, look, there would remain a possibility that his de facto partner could make a claim. Without a will, the people who would be entitled to claim would be his de facto partner, if any, and his children. So for the sake of the cost of a will to make sure that his de facto partner is excluded from any claim under the rules of intestacy, it would be well worth the cost of making a will so that he could benefit his children, if that's his intention.
That's the reason why I'm asking him to have a will made out. The thing is this, then, that what was troubling me was then that if anything happened to him, and the money as his, I'm his father, then could I make claim for the money and then administrate it towards the two kids then?
Well, you would be certainly in within the class of person who could apply to become the administrator of his estate on intestacy, and you would obviously be trying to argue that the relationship with the de facto has broken down irretrievably, and that there's been a property settlement between them such that the relationship is no longer standing. I've got something in the back of my mind that that with the de facto partner there's a period of 2 years from when that you've got to be separated before the relationship is deemed to be terminated, but that may be different if there's actually been a formal property settlement between them that's in the form of a property settlement agreement where they've both been represented by lawyers or alternatively it's been sanctioned by the court. So look, quite honestly, Dave, for the sake of the modest cost in getting a will done, I would be strongly recommending that your son do that. It's certainly going to save an enormous amount of potential grief going forward.
So if I outlive them over the years, I can then administer this, the money that he has and give it appropriately for anything each two kids require.
Yes.
I mean, they don't really need it because they're particularly well off. But the thing is this then, it's a question that what was at the back of my mind was then that if he passed away, could this de facto then claim the money that he has? And then, as I said, as his father, I think I have a legitimate right then for to be able to say that money is mine until such time as I then distribute the thing over a period of time where I think fit for the benefit of these two kids.
Yeah, well, it would certainly never be your money, but you could make an application to be the administrator of the estate, which would mean that you would be holding the funds on trust for his children.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right, then.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. Thanks, John.
Okay, then, Dave. All the very best.
Thank you.
Bye now. And the time is just past 10 minutes to 10. That's 10 minutes to 11, daylight saving time, and that means there's only 10 minutes left for you to call. So if you need some advice today, get on that telephone right now. 5520888, the number, 5520888. And we say good morning to Emma. G'day, Emma. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you very much for receiving my call.
How can I help you today?
Yes, John. Yes, we are thinking of, we are senior pensioners, my husband and myself.
Mm-hmm.
We are thinking of giving a house to one of our children. We would just like to know the process that we can do to get it, given to one of them.
Right. Well, look, there is a problem in doing that, Emma, in that you can only give away a relatively small amount of money each year. And if you gave this property to your child, then you would still be deemed to have that asset for a continuing number of years. I think from memory the amount you're allowed to give away is $10,000 a year, but a maximum of $30,000 over 3 years, 5 years, sorry, yeah, $30,000 over 5 years. So it's a relatively small amount. What I would recommend you do before you do anything, Emma, is go in and see Centrelink and just tell them what you're thinking of doing so that you know exactly what the impact on your pension is going to be, because the last thing you'd want to do is go ahead and do this and think, oh, wow, we've done a wonderful thing for our child, and then find out that it's adversely affecting your pension entitlements.
Yes, we have done that.
Mm-hmm.
We have gone to Centrelink, and we said, and we have put to them our situation.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really receiving a full pension.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that if we do that, like because we're trying to downsize, we do dispose of our properties, there will be no change in our situation now because presently we're not receiving a full pension.
Okay, so what you want then is the process that you need to go through to transfer the property to your child.
Yes, that's
right.
It. That's
okay, so you would need to get a valuation of the property. The Office of State Revenue will normally accept a valuation from a real estate agent as long as it quotes at least three comparable sales in the area. And then you would need to have a transfer prepared in relation to that transaction, and if you're going to be gifting the property, then the consideration for the transfer would be love and affection, but there will still be stamp duty payable on the unencumbered value of what you're transferring. So if the property was worth $500,000, for example, there could be quite a significant amount of duty payable. If your child intends to move into the property as their principal place of residence, then it may be that there's a concessional rate of duty applicable as principal place of residence, or if it's their first principal place of residence, the duty may be less. But it would probably be advisable, I would recommend, Emma, that you see your solicitor to get those documents organised and to ensure that it's done in the correct way and that you don't pay any more stamp duty than you need to.
All right. Okay. Well, I suppose the solicitor fees will depend on the amount of the...
Shouldn't, because the transaction is a fairly straightforward one. Normally, the fees on a normal purchase are higher because there's a risk involved in the transaction and there's a lot more work for the lawyer to do. In this particular case, probably all that's really going to be needed to be done is a transfer. You would know what the rates on the property are. There might need to be a title search, it would be pretty straightforward, and I wouldn't think the fees would be terribly expensive. The most expensive part will definitely be the stamp duty, followed by the titles office registration fee.
I believe that there will be some capital gains as well for that property.
If you were not living in the property, I gathered from what you said earlier, you were downsizing, which suggested it was your home. If it is your home that you're living in at the moment that you're giving to your child, then there shouldn't be any capital gains tax because it's your principal place of residence. If it's an investment property, then if it was purchased after September 1985, then there very well may be capital gains tax on it, and it would be best to speak to your accountant in relation to that.
So I have a solicitor and an accountant?
Probably, yes.
All right. Thank you
very much.
Okay,
then, Emma, all the very best.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
And with the time coming up to 10:04, we say good morning to George. G'day, George. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good morning.
How can I help you?
Bell Legal drew up a will for me. It had all the bells and whistles and trinkets and everything on it. Now, as you experience many times, the one in-law has blown the whole thing up altogether, which means that my daughter's married to him and she's not married to me, so there's a split there, and I don't see grandkids, I don't see kids. I just don't know what to do with this about the will now.
Mm-hmm.
My executor was my daughter, and the other executor, it was dual. The other one's my brother, so he's still in the picture.
Right.
Just what's the advice now? Which way do I turn?
Well, I would suggest that you come back and go through your circumstances so that we can work out what would be the best thing for you to do in terms of your will. So I would recommend that you ring and make an appointment and come in, and because obviously it needs to be done on a confidential basis rather than in the gaze of the public in this program. So I would recommend, George, that you ring and make an appointment, and we can sort it out from there.
Okay.
All the very best, then, George.
Thank you, and to you as well. Many more.
Cheers now. And the time just coming up to 10:03. 10:03, daylight saving time. And Lynette, you're the lucky last.
Thank you very much.
How can I help?
I have a very small query. When my father passed away, the a trustee company was doing it, and they delayed everything because they needed to find a witness to the will.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 94. Is that usual?
Well, there must have been some query in relation to the probating of his will because of his age. So maybe there was an issue about testamentary capacity or something of that nature, or there was a question about something on the will where there's perhaps...
very straight.
Yeah, where there's been a mark on the will or something where the court wants an explanation of what occurred. So that would be the only reason why I could think there would be.
Experienced delays in locating a witness to the will for preparation of affidavits.
Yeah, well, that'd be for probate. But I don't know. You normally don't need to know where the witnesses are to probate a will. So I would suggest
I think
you need to ask them for an explanation of why that's delaying the application for probate, because normally the will is simply put in with an affidavit by the executor, which is the public trustee company, so that'd be it. But look, we'll have to leave it there, unfortunately, Lynette. Mm-hmm. I would get onto the trustee company. We're just coming up to the news, so I'll need to call it off. Please give them a call and ask for an explanation. Beryl and Les, if you could please stay online. I'll need to take those calls when we get off air. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, until next week, thank you so much for calling today. Hope the rain doesn't bother you too much. I'll look forward to being with you again, same time next week. Goodbye. God bless.